wasn't trying to impress you guys or anything. This is just kind of what was clean. Don't get scared. We're not changing any protocols or anything. So another thing about me, I think I might have shared with a few people, I'm really, really bad at math. I'm just not good with numbers. And I know that there's recent research talking about how math is taught, and maybe there are ways in which it dissuades people and scares them. Maybe I'm a victim of that. Maybe my brain wasn't wired right. I don't know what it is, but I'm really, really bad at math. I used to say when I was in high school that sitting in a math class, the teacher might as well be talking Greek. I mean, it really wouldn't make a huge difference. Then you get to calculus and statistics, and they actually are putting Greek letters in the equations. And that was the end of it. There's no hope for me. Much of the high school curriculum in Jamaica, there's a huge portion of it you're doing algebra, algebraic equations, where you're solving for x, and or you're trying to solve for x or y or whatever it is they're asking you to solve for. And that was me quite often. I don't know if you could read that. It says, look at the guy's face, the terror, the confusion, the befuddlement. For those who can't read it, it says, when you finish an exam and your friends are arguing whether the answer was 75 or 80, but what you got was -4. That's when you realize something really wrong happened here. Like, something really, really wrong. Did I transpose a number incorrectly? Did I not change the sign? Somewhere along the line, there's a step that went wrong, and you realize, oh my goodness, this just went terribly, terribly wrong. And so today, we're going to look at Genesis chapter 6. And when I was preparing for that and reading it, I just kind of had that familiar feeling. And I think at one point, I might have put my hands on my head just like that. And I'm like, something went really wrong here. And I think God kind of agreed. So let's look at the first few verses of Genesis chapter 6. When the number of people started to increase throughout the fertile land, daughters were born to them. The divine beings saw how beautiful human women were, so they married the ones they chose. The Lord said, my breath will not remain in humans forever because they are flesh. They will live 120 years. In those days, giants lived on the earth, and also afterward, when divine beings and human daughters had sexual relations, they gave birth to children. These were the ancient heroes, famous men. The Lord saw that humanity had become thoroughly evil on the earth, and that every idea in their minds thought up was always completely evil. The Lord regretted making human beings on the earth, and he was heartbroken. So the Lord said, I will wipe off the land the human race that I've created. From human beings to livestock to the crawling things, the birds in the skies, because I regret I ever made them. But as for Noah, the Lord approved of him. What? Yeah, I emailed Kyle once. I was like, you know, Kai, I hadn't done a teaching in a while, and I kind of would like to get back on it. And that's when he told me that we're doing a series on Genesis. And let the record show, I emailed him. I'm like, that's great. I'm really excited. Living in the U.S., people in the U.S. just don't really do Old Testament series very much. So I was really excited about it. And I specifically emailed him, as long as I don't get that section with the giants. And something went really wrong. And here I am today. The Lord said he regretted making humans. As we're reading, this is clear that we're not talking about just a slight deviation of the plans or a little incident here or there. This whole project went completely off the rails. This is getting negative 4 when the answer is really 80. He regretted making animals, and he was simply just going to wipe the slate clean. It's unclear if he intended to remake it or not at this particular moment in his deliberation. But he's heartbroken to see the things had gone so terribly wrong. Every thought that came to people's minds were completely evil all the time. Just on a kind of cultural observation note, I first moved to the States in 2000, like around September, around election time. And I've noticed something about Americans with elections. You all sort of frame your elections in very apocalyptic tone. I don't know why, but like the end of the world is going to take place regardless of, you know, depending on what side you're on and who wins. And I've been hearing that since 2000 when I just got here, and it's still about to end. And so maybe this time of electioneering, you're more primed to relate to this sense of things being terribly wrong and can relate to what God was talking about, and that the fate of all mankind is balancing on this hanging chad. We're going to get back to the giants a little later. But I just want to talk a little bit and put things in context. So just by way of reminder, sometimes we forget there were no chapters or verses in the Bible. They didn't read it in nicely spread out sermon series. It was all one story written down together as one. There are disagreements of just one or two, but we'll just kind of take it as we have it, as one right now. So as we read this, I want you to think of this story and still think about Adam and Eve. Think about Cain and Abel. Think about the Spirit of God hovering over the waters, that this is all a part of it. And I try to imagine that yes, more things are going wrong. I try to imagine maybe during the Exodus or somewhere along the way when the Israelites are returning, leaving Egypt, maybe one night or one afternoon that just finished raining, there's still a little bit of humidity in the air, and the sun is peeking out, and there's a rainbow. And then a grandmother is watching her grandchildren, and they all go, "Wow, look at this beautiful rainbow." And the grandmother pulls them together and says, "I need to tell you a story about who you are." And she starts the story. "In the beginning, the world was without shape, without and formless, and darkness covered the waters." And so grandma goes on to tell her grandchildren why they are who they are, why the world looks the way it is. And at some point, she kind of gets some deviations, and this is why we have a rainbow. And she keeps telling the story. This is an origin story. It establishes not only that God is a source of life, but establishes that he is the arbiter of what's good. He was the arbiter of what's right, what's wrong, how the created world or created order was supposed to work. It establishes that he has the power to make adjustment to that created order, which he does at points in this sort of story. And humans are at the center of the story. holding a very special place, said that they're very close to God. They bear his image and likeness. And the first few characters, God spoke with them and was very close and intimate with them. And even after Adam and Eve were expelled in the garden, there was still intimacy. It says that they're close enough, and I have no idea what this looked like or how it played out, but they're close enough that when Cain and Abel were presenting their sacrifice to God, Cain was able to perceive that God was pleased with Abel and displeased with him. And God was able to perceive that Cain was upset, jealous, disappointed, angry. And he spoke to him and addressed it. And that was the nature and the level of the intimacy with God and man. There was also intimacy and harmony with God and the land. Abel's blood cried out from the ground. And God speaks of this. And God could hear and feel the loss of Abel from the ground itself. Man was supposed to be harmonious with the created order. Said that the animals and the trees and the vegetation were for the man, for the human, for them to find food, for them to give names to it, and even working and giving to the soil was rewarding and easy, and the soil gave back. In chapter 4, God, it talks about, this is a little nugget in there, about a man named Enoch who walked with God so closely that God eventually just said, hey, let's come on up. God took him. But over time, the relationship between God and man, God and creation, human and the creation, got worse and worse. There was a first murder recorded. There was another murder, just kind of slipped in a list of this person begat that person and begat that person, and oh, by the way, this guy killed somebody, then begat somebody else, until we get to chapter 6. So I think the stories in, and the series that we're doing right now is Genesis 1 to 11. And this is everything that happened before Abraham showed up on the scene. And the nature of the Bible stories changed pretty radically. It becomes more of a narrative form. But between 1 and 11, you have this origin story going. And we often talk about the fall. But I think that the fall wasn't just the one event. But I think really what we're seeing from 1 to 11 is an unfolding of a falling away of man and God, falling further and further away from each other. From Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, Lamech, until we get to the giants. And God said, this is just not working anymore. God is no longer able to solve for X. Over time, he kind of tweaks the equation. He says, all right, they'll take them out of the garden, and we'll tweak the equation that way. Maybe we will send Cain away by himself, let him walk and roam the earth. That will fix it. Didn't fix it. Until God finally declares that my breath will not stay with man forever. The New Living Translation renders this, my spirit will not struggle with man forever. The very life force will be taken away. All right, now to the giants. So there are a few different theories about what this means. I don't know if any of them are right. And I don't think anybody is totally confident in what this all stands for. But let's just address it. It's there. Can't pretend it's not there. In the version I read, rendered divine, the words divine beings, a lot of other versions says sons of God, which we find coming up in the Old Testament over and over. And so it's a whole set of arguments about what this might mean based on the use of that phrase. So after Cain killed Abel, the one theory is this, that the sons of God were referring to people who were godly. After Cain killed Abel, Adam and Eve had a son called Seth, who was sort of a replacement son. And it sort of says it like that, that, you know, they lost Abel and God gave them Seth, or they had Seth. And the idea is Seth's descendants are godly and Cain's descendants are not. And so the sons of God are the children from Cain's line, and the daughters of the humans are from Cain. Another version of the story says that these are fallen angels from the kind of bigger story of the rebellion of that was led by Satan, the devil, and these are the angels that were cast out of heaven and they were on earth, and that's who they're talking about. Another version of it says some of the non-Jewish peoples that lived there thought of themselves as God, and their royalty, their princes or kings called themselves God, and so it's just a story about the intermingling of the people who are godly, who knew who God was, and those who don't. So the people who translated the version I read kind of tipped their hand on what they think it was by using the phrase divine beings. Another way to look at it, which I kind of like this one, but you know, if you like the other ones, that's fine. But I think the other point, this point will capture what's going on, is that one commentator concluded that this introduction of divine beings to the story with its polytheistic overtones was just a way to further mark the corruption the human race had gone through. Maybe as grandma is telling the story, it explains why our neighbors don't worship God and why they have other gods. As we see throughout the Old Testament, God is regularly trying to encourage and reinforce to the Israelites that the gods of the other people aren't real, they're not powerful, they can't do anything for you. And he continues to have to do this reinforcing and reminding. So that's my best attempt at explaining the giants. But I think ultimately it's a part of the bigger story that this went really, really wrong. And a part of the falling away of the humans from the Creator. The stories of the fall of man are about discord, separation, violence. At the end of the creation account in chapters 1 and 2, it said that God rested and declared what he made good. The humans were like him and lived harmoniously, the creation. They were able to eat and live. And the voice of God moved in the cool of the day, and Adam and Eve heard him and felt him. With the beginning of the fall, the disruption of the divine relation, the relationship between the divine and the human, was marked by separation. One of the first things we know of God in this beginning of the end of the relationship is him asking for Adam, "Where are you?" God and the humans were separated. In pronouncing the curse on the humans for this separation, God disrupts the harmony with the humans and the creation. Only through painful toil will the humans be able to eat. The earth would not respond gladly with its food. God didn't immediately kill the humans, but they started to kill each other. In a jealous rage, Cain killed his brother Abel. God's still in relationship. God shows up to the scene. The Spirit of God shows up. And he says, "Where is your brother?" The humans are separated from each other. Now, the ultimate crisis point in chapter 6, God says, "My breath will not remain. My spirit will no longer struggle and strive with humans." And with the entire creation project at the crisis point, God decides to abandon the whole project. Something went terribly wrong. But there's an interesting thing that kind of came out, I think, when I kind of thought of this falling narrative. And if you think about Grandma again, looking at the rainbow, talking to her grandchildren, I don't think her intention was to terrify or scare her grandchildren or to make them not want to draw closer to God. But throughout, at each step, at each fissure, God creates a way out. God gives some grace. Adam and Eve weren't struck dead on the spot, but he gives them clothing and asks them to leave Eden. Cain was given a protective mark to save him from the same fate he meted out to his brother. And from Cain's children, we get people who were the first to gather livestock, the first musicians, tool makers. Even at this crisis point, God identifies Noah. These other stories come at a point, they reveal a God of grace, a God that has tender mercy in the midst of a rebellion against him. The rest of the story is a grand reclamation of creation and a new creative order. And the center of that is Jesus. And as the crisis point reveals, it kind of stops at these questions of separation and discord. Where are you separated from God? Where is your brother separated from each other? Where is my spirit? Jesus comes and answers those questions for us and gives us the heart of God in this new creation, this new creative order. In response to the question of where are you, Jesus says to us, "My Father, who has given them to me," speaking of those who follow Jesus, "is greater than all, and no one is able to snatch them from my Father's hand. I and the Father are one." God reaches out to us in answering the question, "Where are you? Where is your brother?" Jesus says to us, "I give you a new commandment. Love each other. Just as I have loved you, so you also must love each other. This is how everyone will know that you are my disciples, when you love each other." In response to the problem of the presence of God's Spirit and his abiding and striving, Jesus says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments. I will ask the Father, and he will send another companion who will be with you forever. This companion is the Spirit of truth, whom the world can't receive because it neither sees him or recognizes him. You know him because he lives with you and will be with you." As we respond to God's invitation, we can go and eat at his table, know that his Spirit is with us forever, And this God of grace continues to strive with us. Amen.